Hello, and welcome to Pinecone Podcast, where we have conversations about issues that are important to you, like faith and family, religion and relationships, Christianity and the church, and a whole lot more. So grab a cup of coffee or your favorite drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy Art, Wes, and Lacey as they have a conversation on Evergreen's Pinecone Podcast.
Okay, so here we are. This is our first ever attempt at a Zoom podcast, although I think our listeners might just be getting the audio. But I'm here with Wes and Lacey, and I can see them on my screen. How are you guys doing? How are you doing, Lacey?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's good to see Wes. We have not seen or heard Wes this year on Pinecone Podcast. So should we let him talk?
I guess.
Go for it, Wes. How are you?
Doing well. Good to be with y'all.
That's it?
He's been gone for like 6 months, and that's all he has to say.
It took me 6 months to figure that out.
So we're not going to do a podcast on the coronavirus, but it's obviously a part of our lives and a part of our listeners' lives. So just real quick, each of you have 20 seconds. How are you doing through the quarantine and as the quarantine ends, I guess, and the virus? Lacey, you get to go first.
Okay, I'm sorry. I think there's an airplane going overhead if you hear that.
Can't hear it.
Okay. I am doing really well.
Now
you hear it?
Yeah.
Sorry. Not a lot changed for us, honestly. We are less busy, but my kids were already homeschooled, and Ben was able to pretty much work through this whole thing. So I'm thankful for that. His hours got cut a little bit, but they've come back up. So really thankful for that.
Wes?
One of the reasons why I haven't been on the Pinecone podcast is because I did a sabbatical at the beginning of the year. And my first Sunday back was March 1st. We had three Sundays, and then we started meeting online. And my dad said to me when we started meeting online, he says, "All right, you get a second sabbatical." And I said, no. And I would say, this has been as busy a time of ministry as I've had in my whole 15 plus years of being a pastor, just because we basically had to rethink church completely. We had to, so we had to figure out what that looked like. And then of course still preaching and teaching, putting together worship services in new ways, then also just trying to keep in touch with everybody and, see how everybody's doing, help coordinating our response. And I mean, happily, a lot of things we had in place before still, really translated, but there was definitely those first couple weeks were a steep learning curve for us. And we were already pretty good in terms of our social media presence. So I'd say it's really been busy, and it's slowing down a bit, and I've been able actually to get in the past couple weeks, get some days off. So that's been good.
He took your 20 seconds, Art.
I wasn't going to.
She's timing me. Sheesh. I'm 6 months.
I want to use my 20 seconds.
Now you talk.
I want to say, use my 20 seconds to say thanks, Wes, for what you've, how you've led our church and the extra effort. I know there's been a lot more on your plate and a lot different. I don't think they probably taught you in seminary how to deal with an issue like this. So kind of learning as you go as well. And I appreciate that. And the shameless plug early on for those listening, if you go to westwhite.net, you can read a lot of great articles and blogs that Wes has written about the coronavirus and links to articles. He's done a great job of researching and putting together thoughts, and it's a valuable resource to check out.
We plugged flight.net the whole time you were gone.
Wow, thank you. Thank you for those shameless plugs. Is that what are we calling it? Shameless?
Yeah. It's okay. You're our number one sponsor.
What about the Moon Pie General Store and Book Warehouse and Pigeon Forge?
Yeah. He's our other number one sponsor.
I mean, he's probably actually given you more things than I have.
Well, that's true.
I mean, because he's given us a large quantity of moon pies.
Yes.
Which have been eaten mostly by Brennan.
And Sunday he gave us 12 donuts.
Wow.
So.
What will he give us next week?
So there you go. He is now our number one sponsor.
All right. I really do want to hear how you're doing quarantine wise.
Oh, I'm actually doing quite well. Kind of like you. A lot of things haven't changed a lot for me. And in some ways, maybe better. Got my kids here with me all the time now, and we're doing good. Lots of home projects and things like that, so doing well.
Awesome.
So
I think we've all been doing home projects, and I think that's something we should talk about.
You can drive
Lacey, what? I can interrupt you now? Is that permitted? That's part of the new rules?
Yes.
Go for it.
So Lacey has a very nice garden. I saw it the other day.
Thanks.
And I thought it looked really good. She's got things growing.
Yeah. I'm pretty excited about it. like the weekend before the quarantine started, the very weekend before, we moved into a new house, which has been a huge blessing. But it has also allowed us to have lots of home projects to do. My husband has been, man, he has just done so much work, and I'm so thankful for his willingness to do those things. But I built myself a raised bed garden, and I'm really excited to have food from it soon.
One thing I would say about your husband is I think that he absolutely loves doing that stuff, though.
Yeah.
Am I not right?
It's such a blessing to me. And I am so thankful having three boys that he is such a great example of that to them. Just that he loves doing projects and improving things. And he's had to crawl into our really gross crawl space, and he's not complained about it. And yeah. He's a good guy. I like him.
I would definitely complain about crawling into that crawl space.
It's gross.
However, I've also done some gardening, and I've got now two raised bed gardens, which combined are about probably the size of yours.
I need to see it.
So we actually took out two trees. To Leland Cypress Saturday.
Wow. And,
you know, there is no better exercise to take off weight than removing a stump from the ground. And I don't mean art stump, but that's a terrible joke. But I'm sure you've heard stump jokes before, Art. You ever heard any?
No. What?
So, but anyways, back removing that stump, it's like, man, that is some serious work. Happily, I got my son to help me with that, and he did a lot of good work. I was going to have to dig a hole. I put in a trellis to grow cucumbers up the trellis.
Okay.
And I was going to do it in actually one of the raised gardens and have to dig, you know, it probably like 2 feet down, you know, and then I saw that hole where that tree had been. And I was like, that's about the size I need. So I put the trellis in there. It saved me a lot of work. and the cucumbers are starting to go, not up the trellis, but I just think gardening is just one of the best things. It's like something that we are made to do.
It's relaxing. I am not a huge flower garden person. I want my garden to have purpose. And I mean, I know flowers are pretty.
Beauty is purpose.
It is. It is. But I, efficiency maybe. I want to use the space efficiently. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway. Go ahead.
I like to do the vegetables too.
Yeah.
I like flowers too.
They're pretty. Art projects, you?
Actually, my projects have mostly been inside. We did plant like a couple of small shrubs and stuff outside. But I've spent most of my time remodeling a bathroom. Started off, I was just gonna put in a new floor. It ended up with a new shower door and a new floor and painting the whole room and doing some trim work and some other stuff like that. So it's not as fun as gardening, I guess, but still a home project.
Is your roof still leaking?
It is not. I was able to get that fixed. I did have a leak in my hot water line. So now I have a hole in my ceiling in my dining room. If either of you wants to come over or Lacey, if your husband wants to come over and fix it, that would be great.
You would totally do that.
My wife.
Okay. Whoever. I'm not proud. Whoever can fix it. we can get Elijah to fix it. It would be fine with me. So,
that's a great segue. I actually have a good segue if you want me to.
Yours is, I've been wondering because I was just sitting here while we were talking about gardening, thinking I said we weren't going to do a podcast on the quarantine. So I guess we're going to do it on gardening.
Well, we are.
So segue us into something.
So this year, in my Bible reading, what I decided to do, I got a new Bible a couple of years ago, and I have read through the Bible, which is good because I'm pastor. Mm-hmm. And but I realized like several of the I underline in the Bible, I write in it, and I realized like every few books there was like no underlining, and I said this year for my daily Bible reading, I read about a chapter a day. I'm going to read the books where I don't have underlining, or very much underlining. So that led me to last month, or probably in March, I guess, to 1st and 2nd Kings, where you find the story of Elijah. And the first section, our first introduction to Elijah is in 1st Kings 17, verse 1. And he just appears out of nowhere, tells Ahab there's not going to be any rain for a long time. And then he's just gone. And what we find is that he goes to this really remote spot and he's there for 5 months just by himself. And I was just like, it really spoke to me because I said, man, here is Elijah, for different reasons, experiencing fundamentally what so many people are experiencing right now and in that time of being isolated. And so here we have this great prophet doing this great thing. And it's like, that's like an hour of his life. But then the next 5 months is a quarantine. I'm, you know, using that word a little bit incorrectly, but basically that's what it was. He's in quarantine. He's in isolation for 5 months. And, you know, we do a lot of reflection about, you know, the big events, but I personally had never really reflected on what is the significance of recording that Elijah spent 5 months basically doing nothing, you know, as far as we might say it. I think he was actually doing things, but, and what does that tell us about the Christian life? Because even if we don't go into a quarantine of 5 months or 2 months or a month, there's definitely times in the Christian life of isolation. And how do we handle that? And what does this passage tell us about that? In the next section after that, then he actually spends another 3 years basically in a foreign town, away from his home, away from family, away from other prophets, away from other believers. And he's just with a widow and her son. And he stays in this town for 3 years, kind of just, again, not, as far as we can tell, not doing much of the Elijah type stuff. So I was just kind of, you know, I'm just kind of thinking, what does that tell us about the Christian life and the way that God works with his people? And I thought it was, obviously, I wanted to reflect on it, particularly because I thought we found ourselves in a season where a lot of people were rather isolated. So that was what just struck me. It was just like, wow, you know, here it really resonates. So I'd be interested to hear if any of that resonated with you, any thoughts you had as you reflected upon it.
Go ahead, Lacey. I don't want to interrupt you.
Oh, yeah. It definitely resonates with me. I've thought a lot about Sabbath and how often God required of his people to Sabbath, or the land needed a Sabbath, or things like that. And I've just heard so many people say, and you know, read on Facebook or other places where people are just like, you know, this is hard, but it really is what we needed, or I needed this because we were just too busy. There's so many things that we were doing that now I realize, oh, I didn't have to do that, or it wasn't necessary. And it's giving people more time to reflect than I think we've ever had before. And I imagine that that's what Elijah was doing. Just spending a lot of time reflecting, walking with God, finding out more about who he was. And I don't know, being prepared for the next assignment God had for him. I don't know. What do you think, Art?
I agree. I like what you said about we get so busy that we don't take the time to do the things that we should be doing. And it's not always bad things that we're busy with.
Right.
And I think Satan knows that, and he knows to fast forward to sort of the latter part of the Elijah story with God speaking to him in a quiet voice. You know, that God's speaking to us. It's not that he's not speaking to us. It's just that we can't hear because we have too much going on. But I think that the overall thing about Elijah that strikes me is that he had like great victories all through the narrative or through the story. You know, he raised the widow's son. She died, and he brought him back to life, or through God, you know, he did that. And then this story, which I guess we'll get to more maybe, but with calling down, you know, the sacrifice, the fire onto the sacrifice. But he had the great victories, but then he still seemed to doubt. He still seemed to doubt God, or to doubt what was happening.
Yeah.
And I find myself doing that as well, you know.
The interesting thing is, just if you don't know, to our listeners, Wes has been preaching through Elijah, and you can find those sermons on our Facebook page. But the interesting thing to me about Elijah is he felt all the emotions, every emotion possible you can find in Elijah's story, which is great because there's so much about his life that is relatable, even though he was experiencing, I think sometimes much higher highs than are even possible to us, which probably also means he felt some much lower lows, even just with the fact that, you know, Jezebel wanted him dead. It's not many of us that have to deal with a very powerful person wanting us dead. But all the emotions in between, you know, you can find depression in his story. You can find victory in his story. You can find deep relationships in his story with the widow and her son, and how deeply he felt when her son passed away. So it's his life is so relatable. And I think sometimes he's overlooked because he's an Old Testament character.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that struck me as I studied his life again, just that in spite of the fact, you know, as we maybe learn these stories in Sunday school and, you know, heard the awesome things that the Lord did, we might miss focusing on the variety of emotions that he felt. And I think, so I guess one of the things I would want to say or want to think about is that we are people who experience those variety of emotions as well. Maybe not with the intensity or all the time in the same or exact same way as Elijah, but we do as well. And yet he was obviously someone who walked with the Lord, and the Lord worked with him and helped him move forward and did amazing things through him. And so to me, that encourages me when I feel, you know, those times where I feel isolated or alone or fearful, that doesn't mean that God's not working through me. God's not going to do amazing things in my life or use me in amazing ways, that he's going to help me in the midst of those things. So that's what I'm trying to draw that. And I'm not sure that I've got it, you know, exactly pinned down. In some ways, I just tried to tell the story and let this story speak for itself. But obviously, in the way you tell it, you know, you're kind of bringing out certain things. But, you know, as I draw out a lesson from it, is like, those are the things that I wanted people to be encouraged that this is the normal Christian life. There's ups and downs, there's difficult emotions and challenges, and God meets us in those things and does great things in our lives and through our lives.
And sometimes we might see Elijah or read about Elijah, and like you said, miss that down part. And we might think, mm-hmm. Well, if God did something great in my life, I would be able to trust him more. But
right.
But that's not necessarily what it's all about either. Does that make sense?
Right.
Is it the Waymaker song that we've been singing where we sing, even when I don't see it, you're working? Even yep. when I don't feel it, you're working. It's such a good thing to speak those truths to ourselves. Just because on a daily basis, we speak so many lies to ourselves. Like, yeah, if I saw God, if you just did this, then I would know. And catching ourselves thinking those things and replacing it with the truth of, even when I don't see it, you are working, even when I don't feel it. And it's so biblical, and we can go back and point to people like Elijah and say, look, Elijah was sitting in isolation for 5 months and God was still working. He was still bringing the widow to the place where she would only have flour, a little bit of flour and a little bit of oil left, so that whenever Elijah came into her life, that situation would be used for him, you know, for his glory. God is still working. And we just need to read through those biblical stories so we can remind ourselves of those truths in our own lives.
Yeah, and I think a great one out of all that narrative, the one that stands out to me where when we don't see it, God is working, is in the life of Obadiah. That, you know, I mean, he was literally, he didn't want anybody to see what he was doing because he was clandestinely feeding and taking care of 100 of the prophets of the Lord, 50 in two different caves. And yet he was the palace administrator. So he was a high official, and he knew that if he got found out, that he would be in big trouble, probably killed. And yet he did what was right. He was a great example of courage, and he was also an example of wisdom and prudence, because he was able to figure out how to do that. And so God was raising up a man with courage and prudence in order to take care of a whole bunch of his prophets. And Elijah had no idea that that was going on. And then similarly, then the Lord tells him that when he says, I alone am left of all the prophets, that he says, I have 7,000 that I've reserved for myself, have not bowed the knee to Baal. And, you know, Elijah didn't know that. And I think that that's so important for us to recognize that we should just basically assume God's doing a whole bunch of things that we don't know about. Of course, some of these things we actually know about, but we forget, you know, our emotions take over and we start telling ourselves a story. I'm all by myself. And we know what we see. I'll give you an example. One of my kids said to me, they were going out at 9 o'clock this morning, and he said, oops, I gave it away, but nobody else knows. He said, nobody's out at 9 o'clock. And I said, actually, I think a lot of people are, you know, most people get up before noon. So that's because like all my kids, basically they get up at noon. So, you know, going from our own experience, it's like, so basically everybody else is getting up at noon, you know, it's just, and I mean, once you say that, you realize, oh, that's not true. But we all tend to just evaluate things based on what we see and not with our eyes and experience rather than upon reflection.
Yeah.
I think what is interesting, I like that you brought up Obadiah, because even though he was very brave and did amazing things, we also see that he felt a lot of different emotions as well. You know, even though he was being very brave, whenever Elijah showed up, he said, I don't want to go talk to Ahab. He's going to kill me. And I think that's one thing. I know we weren't necessarily talking about quarantine stuff, but at the same time, like, Wes, you've been great about saying, like, it's okay to grieve these things. It's okay to feel real feelings. It is just reality. It's how we were made to process, I guess.
Yeah, and so just like it's okay to, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's okay to grieve, but it's also okay to be afraid. You know, I've seen a lot of this faith, not fear, you know, these statements, and, you know, I think they have a valid point that we don't want to let fear dominate us, but there's also a point that fear in itself is actually a legitimate emotion that actually energizes us to respond to threats. And sometimes those threats can be legitimate or illegitimate and not seen the right way. But one of the things Joseph Pieper who wrote a lot on Christian virtue. He said this. He said, to be brave is not the same as to have no fear. Indeed, fortitude actually rules out a certain kind of fearlessness that is based upon a false appraisal and evaluation of reality. And he goes on to say that basically, in a sense, you can't be brave unless you have fear. Because unless you actually are concerned that something could harm you, then there's no need for courage. If you don't feel any danger, then that's not courage. Courage actually presupposes fear. And so that's a great point to add in there. And you could tell, fear was just under the surface. Because what happens is Elijah tells him to go get Ahab so he can talk to him. And Obadiah gets really scared that he's going to come back and Elijah's not going to be there. And he will get in trouble for having seen Elijah and not apprehending him or taking him out. And so he responds with this fearful response. But Elijah reassures him and says, look, I'm going to talk to Ahab today. But the point is that without that fear and without some sense of fear, he couldn't have been a person of courage. So it's important that we don't say we need to eliminate fear. We need to actually feel fear to the right degree and the right time against the right threats in accordance with reality. And our actions need to be calibrated to that fear. So, for example, jumping off a building is something that we should be afraid of doing, and that fear of death ought to lead us from doing such. But at the same time, if someone says to us that I'm going to push you off this building unless you denounce your Jesus, then you have to say, I'm not going to denounce Jesus, and you have to do what you want. That doesn't mean we're not afraid of falling off. It just means that we're able by faith and reason to see that it's better for us to be faithful to the Savior than even to lose our life. Did I say that right?
So. Yes. Yeah, I think that as you were talking, I was thinking about the story of in Elijah of the two sacrifices, you know, when he, and just a quick version for anybody that might not have read it or listens to your sermons or whatever, when he tells them that, you know, to build they build the two altars, and the one is the sacrifice to Baal, and one, you know, he's got the sacrifice to God. And then of course they try to call down the fire and theirs doesn't burn up. And then when Elijah does it, he pours water on three times on the altar till the water's like, you know, running over everywhere. And then, you know, he prays to God and God like burns up his sacrifice and everything. But I guess when you were talking, what I was thinking about after that happens, that's when one of the times when he's kind of isolated and when he's afraid that Jezebel's, you know, she wants his life, and he goes and hides and he's scared. And I see those contrasts when you just hear the story that Elijah did, you know, called down the you know, asked God to call, bring in the fire on the sacrifice. You think, well, that took a lot of faith and a lot of courage, but you just think, well, Elijah's this great man of God and he's just able to do that. And that's just easy for a great man of God. But he obviously still had some fear and some doubt, which just highlights the faith it took for him to do that. You know, he did not know that God was going to come through for him, but he had the faith that he would. And by seeing the second part of that story, that kind of highlights how much faith he had, because he did have that fear. And you know, I had never really thought about that until you were just talking of the demonstration of the faith, but then seeing, like we said, the ups and downs of Elijah's life, he had a measure of fear and doubt, which highlights the faith.
And it's interesting to me because is it not right after that that he kind of goes into the wilderness and is what I think a lot of theologians that I've read say that it seems like he was experiencing depression at that point after this super high.
Right.
So where that helps us, I think, is to say, if someone feels depressed or burnt out, then they may feel like, so I'm not a person of faith because look at how bad I feel.
Yeah.
You know, and I think putting those two things together helps people to see that those things aren't necessarily in contrast, that those difficult emotions do not necessarily at all exclude faith, but they can go together with it.
Right. But I also like in the sermon that you did about that portion of his life, you talked a lot about kind of the self-care, or at least God providing self-care for Elijah during that time period was instrumental in being renewed.
Like letting him sleep.
Yes.
It's just interesting that is emphasized.
Never underestimate the power of a good nap.
Amen. Amen. It was interesting when someone read that. I've been writing my sermons out on westwhite.net and then basically reducing that to an outline. That's what I preach off of, is the outline. But so then people who are staying home can read it, and then I also just do an audio version of it. Anyway, one person who read that just said that they were going around doing all kinds of stuff and they just felt overwhelmed, and then after reading that, it made them realize, hey, I can actually take a nap and it's okay. And so then they felt better, you know. I mean, God has given sleep as a gift. I remember I listened to one podcast, TED Talk, sleep is your superpower. So it's restorative. So.
Right. What else you got for us, Lacey?
Well, I was just going to ask Wes, what were your biggest takeaways from the Elisha transition? Like, what point do you think you want people to take away from, you know, the situation where Elijah is being taken and Elisha is left to carry on what Elijah has done?
Yeah, I'd like to hear what you all got out of that. I'd say that was kind of the toughest sermon to put together in a concise way, because there's so many little weird turns in that, because it's like, you know, the prophets say to him, you know, they say, do you not know that your master is going to be taken away? And he said, yeah, shut up, you know, basically. And then they think that the prophets are going to take him, you know, the Lord has taken him away. They think, well, maybe he's in some other mountain somewhere. And then he's like, and they keep pestering him. He's like, go ahead. You know, it seems like he's kind of annoyed with these prophets, you know. And so there's all those little things. And so in terms of expositing that text, one of the challenges, you know, how do you kind of give people a sense of what that means without necessarily getting distracted and trying to explain that? So that I found that a little bit challenging. But the overarching point, you know, and so I think one thing I fear is when you get into all these little details that then you lose the big point, and maybe that happened. But very simple is, even if Elijah's not there, the God of Elijah is. And we all have times in our lives when our Elijah is taken away. And that is not, and that may not be even a person. It may be a house. It may be a place we live. It may be a church, maybe a church building, you know, anything that we rely on, but the God of Elijah is still there. And so, you know, it's easy when those transitions can be really hard, when we've relied on things as emotional support, as a support for how we live. And when those things are gone, we can be grasping around, trying to figure out, flailing around, trying to figure out how to live. And we ask, you know, then that's where that question, where now is the God of Elijah? He's here. And that is your support. So what did you all think on that discussion?
This is totally different and totally different angle than what you were talking about.
Good.
But one thing that just kind of struck me, and I might just really be reading something into this that does not exist at all. But, you know, after Elijah is taken up in a whirlwind and is not there, and he had given his cloak and everything to Elisha. And one of the things that Elisha did, and you talked about it in your sermon Sunday, when the kids, you know, came and they were making fun of him or whatever, or saying, you know, there's the bald prophet or whatever. And he called in the bear that came in and, like, you know, took him out or whatever. And that seems, it's kind of, you know, it is kind of odd to see that, you know, why would he do that to them like that? But then on the other side, when Jezebel wanted to take his life, he ran and hid in a cave. And I just see, like, what I kind of get from that is with Elijah, I'm not trying to put my thoughts on him, but all these great things that he had done, these miraculous things that he had done, and that maybe he didn't see how God would take care of him personally in something that he deemed maybe kind of smaller. So he went and hid. But Elisha, after watching Elijah's life, knew that God would take care of even the little things in his own personal life. And like I said, maybe I'm reading something into that that's not there. But I still think sometimes as things are happening to us, or should I say as things are happening to me, I don't see how God is working in that and can work in something else in my life. But someone else might see that or can see that even when I don't. And I'm not saying that helps them. I'm just saying that that I should you know, see that better or more in my life. And I just think maybe Elisha, you know, knew that, whereas Elijah doubted a little bit.
Well, and if you read through, I mean, I think that's something I have not thought about at all, but now you say it, it actually carries through the rest of the story of Elisha, that he seems to have a sureness that Elijah didn't have. And part of that may be that the Baal party, you might say, was in control of Israel. And even if they were imperfect, the Yahwists, you might say, the proponents of the worship of the Lord, had the ascendancy during the time of Elisha. But even when, like, the king of Aram is coming and surrounds the city in 2 Kings chapter 6, Elisha's just like sitting there. He's okay. But then he and his servants, like, this, we're in trouble. And he says, Lord, open his eyes. And he sees the chariots of fire all around him. And so Elisha seems to have that sense of the present protection of the Lord, maybe in a way that Elijah didn't. So I think that's worth reflecting on.
Do you think that has anything to do with the double portion of his spirit at that time that Elijah left?
I think that's worth considering. What do you think?
I think it could. I haven't done a ton of looking into that, but it's just kind of something that popped into my mind. You know, there's just this extra strength about Elisha, which is neat.
Yeah, I think, you know, just you're taking off in that direction. I think that's one of the illustrations of why God gives us so many stories, because the stories kind of have a power on their own. And even what the person may be thinking and telling it, and I think that that's important, but it doesn't exhaust the story. Once you invent a story, it's like that story has its certain evocative power that's independent even of the author. And I remember I listened to The Lord of the Flies by William Golding, and he read it, and then he'd make little comments at the end of the chapter. And he says, the critics, I remember one chapter, I forget the exact point, but it just stuck with me. He said, the critics have seen this, 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 and this in this chapter. And he said, I didn't really have any of those things in my mind when I wrote it. But he said, but you know, the story is the story. And people can pull things out of it that I might not have seen, you know, originally. And so, anyways, so I think, now I think God, of course, you could say he could see all possible ways that this story could be taken. But in terms of a human being who's telling a story, I mean, we confront it with our own experiences and so on. It's going to speak to us in specific ways. We do need to see it in terms of its own purpose, and in the light of scripture and canon. But I think even within that, there's a lot of room for this is going to hit me powerfully at this time, just like the whole Elijah at the brook Cherith hit me, because I was sitting there in my house and had been in my house for weeks, you know. And so it's like, oh, this is like Elijah. So those things come out at you different times. So, and that's why they have this, you know, that continual enduring power.
Great point. I think that's a great place to wrap it up. And I appreciate you, Wes, coming back to us and joining us again on our podcast. It's great to have you have your voice back with us. Lacey, thank you.
Thank you.
And we're going to get back to doing this on a regular basis. And we haven't talked to you about this, I don't think, but Lacey and I want to discuss the emotionally healthy woman.
Yeah.
The emotionally healthy woman.
Which has way more applications to men than you would actually imagine.
Well, I also want to tell
you. I can imagine that very well. Emotionally healthy woman definitely has some.
I want to tell all these women how to get emotionally healthy.
And we've lost all the.
Yeah, that's right.
This is kind of a first for us. We have ended this podcast with a commercial for the next.
Yeah. Ooh,
that's true.
So if you've listened to this far, first of all, we appreciate you. Thanks for listening. And second, now you know what the next one's going to be. So look for it, wait for it, watch for it. We will talk about emotionally healthy women and men next time around. So thanks, guys, again. And thanks for listening. And we will talk to you all soon. Everybody have a good day, and God bless you. Thanks.